Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. On Friday, January the 30th, thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. Coming up, we hear from people in Dover exactly 10 years after an anti-immigration demo turned into a riot. There are calls for Dreamland bosses to appear before a council committee over their decision to retire the scenic railway. And it's a huge local derby in League Two for Gillingham this weekend. But first, a murder investigation is continuing following the death of a 25-year-old man near Dover. Police were called to reports of a stabbing in Rose Gardens in Athorne yesterday morning. A man in his 60s who was known to the victim has been arrested. Our reporter Max Chesson spoke to us from the scene last night.
Those living next to an active murder investigation have described the experience as very surreal and say they've never seen so many police cars. Officers were called to Rose Gardens in Athorne near Dover just after 9 a.m. today, where it became apparent a man, 25, had been killed following a stabbing. A man in his 60s, who is believed to be known to the victim, has been arrested. Right now, police and investigating officers continue to come in and out the house. A blue tent has been erected at the front of the property, and forensics officers are working hard. It's believed that the property will remain cordoned off overnight.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and a man who strangled his fiancée at her home in Deal has been sent to prison. Daniel G grabbed his victim by the throat and slammed her into a wardrobe in October 2022. The 37-year-old from Whitfield Hill in Dover had three previous domestic abuse convictions against former partners. He's been locked up for 18 months and given a 10-year restraining order. Two men are due in court later following the death of an 89-year-old man in an alleged hit and run in Gillingham. Tom Wallace was carried on the roof of the vehicle for more than a mile following the collision on Gads Hill last month. A 28-year-old is accused of causing death by dangerous driving, while a 29-year-old is charged with perverting the course of justice. A company director who fraudulently pocketed almost £70,000 from sales at a Kent petrol station has avoided jail. Rajit Mary Patrick had an agreement with the operators of an Esso garage on Boxley Road in Maidstone that he could keep money made from grocery sales. Well, a number of discrepancies were noticed during an IT upgrade. The 41-year-old, who now lives in Stoke-on-Trent, has been given a suspended sentence and ordered to do 120 hours of unpaid work. We've got a special report now, as business owners in Dover say the town's reputation is still suffering 10 years after an immigration protest turned into a riot. Stones, bottles and bricks were thrown when far-right activists clashed with counter-demonstrators on this day in 2016. In fact, you can see video from the time within our special report at Kent Online today. Now, our reporter Sam Lennon has been chatting to people in Dover to hear about their memories of the day. We can start by hearing from Sandra Malho, who runs a cafe on Cannon Street.
I come to the police in the morning, the first start, saying it will be a normal protest and it will be very controlled by the police. Yeah. And when everything started coming down, the police lost the control. It's nothing to save the people walking in the streets. Yeah. And in that day, is the market in the street lost completely the market. Yeah. Some of the parents lost the kids.
Yeah.
And it's so frightening.
It was frightening.
And I'm doing first aids inside the cafe.
For people injured, I see.
Yes, okay. I took some kids from the back the back of the garden where we need to put that kids and call the parents. In that day, I called the police.
There were children injured. They weren't protesters or rioters.
No.
There were children,
and
yeah.
Children's lost the parents. We're trying to contact the parents, and I called the police, and the police don't want to get involved.
Yeah.
And it brings a very bad reputation for Dover. Yeah. It's the protest is not from people from Dover. It comes from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I think it's been more and more coming. Because that day has been
very bad. That day was the worst, yeah. Yeah.
Very, very bad. I need to close my doors. The police protecting my windows.
You shut your shop early?
Yes, I shut the shopping very early. And every time these things happen, we're losing business.
You gave first aid to people who were injured. Which sort of people were injured?
It was quite young people.
What age, roughly?
I say between 16 to 18. in the front of my cafe.
What were they doing? Were they customers or?
He's just walking around and get hit by, because he's taking the floor breaks and chucking in the air.
And hit by stones?
Yeah, stones, the vegetables, and the police can't control.
Mazen Kader runs a jewellery shop and pawnbrokers in Dover, and he's described how it was a scary day.
I was in the shop at the time and were absolutely horrendous activity outside the shop. I can't remember the police actually blockading the area, and a start at the time was a start of throwing some object, which one of the objects actually hit my window.
Right, you're afraid of it. That was your worst fear of your property being damaged.
That's correct, and I have to complete the shop down.
Oh, you shut the shop down because of it?
Yes. Yes, I remember it, absolutely remember it, as it happened today. Was the first ever bad experience I had, and I was really in fear of the shop and the jewelry at the time.
Were you afraid for your own safety, or were you safely locked inside?
I did look myself inside, and I still remember one incident having, I got two individuals has running to inside to the shop at the time.
Yeah.
They came in and they sit exactly where I sit now, and they were absolutely terrified and fear of them life.
They were members of the public who came in for shelter?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What did you see being done? Did you see stones being thrown or anything like that?
They throwing at the time, I think, the item they threw at the shop was a bottle.
A glass bottle?
A glass bottle.
Ah, yeah, okay.
And a couple of cans being thrown, and I think a couple of stones, as I remember, toward the other side, not toward my shop.
Was any of your property damaged in the end?
No, I got a bit of scratch in my glass. So it's still there, actually.
Yeah. And how do you look back on that day now?
Looking back at those days and looking at all the demonstration took place after that regarding the immigration issues or another issues going around.
Yeah.
I believe all of us, we have the right to demonstrate and give the impression of our right, but rather to be peaceful and sort of, and is no place to hate between the people, really. The hate is not a good thing to be.
So there was a right to demonstrate, but no right to be violent.
That's correct. Absolutely correct. I do agree with that.
And who was in the, just one more thing, there were two members of the public who came for shelter. Was it just you three inside the shop?
That's it.
Sitting it out till it was over?
Yeah, and there was, actually I had the radio at the time connected to the CCTV, and I advised them, I had two members of the public, fear of them life, and they actually sheltered in my shop, and they notified the police with that fact.
Sam's also been chatting to resident Neil Wiggins about the lasting impact the protesters had.
It was a hard day, I think, for Dover. It did nothing for the town's reputation. It was harmful, I think, to the town and to, you know, businesses. Dover suffers a bit already, you know, from being described as a bit of a rough place sometimes. Mm. And I just think what that day did was it cemented in people's minds that, yeah, Dover was not the best place to go to. And that only harms our high street and our businesses long term.
The police and the courts spent the next 2 years tracking down the offenders, and in total, 64 people were convicted, with sentences adding up to 85 years, some of them suspended. At the time of the riot, small boat crossings weren't as common as they are now, and most asylum seekers were arriving in the county in the back of lorries. But in 2025, more than 41,000 asylum seekers crossed the channel to the UK in small vessels, the second highest annual figure on record.
Kent Online reports.
A one-way system is set to be created in Higham so the redevelopment of a former factory can move forward. Plans to transform the old Neuralite site on Canal Road were approved back in 2021. Now developers want a stretch of road covering Lower Rochester Road and Gore Green Road to become one way to make it easier for lorries accessing the land. Elsewhere, work is due to start today to redevelop a former bus station in Folkestone. The shelters and planter walls on Bouverie Square will be removed to make way way for a new green space, including a play area. It's all part of a £20 million regeneration project. A search is underway for a new town crier in Sheerness. The role's being brought back as part of the Festival of Sheppey, which is running this summer. Auditions are being held next month at the Blue Town Criterion Museum. Heritage bosses say the ideal candidate will be able to talk clearly and loudly and have a bit of theatre about them. And finally, the Mayor of Margate is calling for Dreamland bosses to appear before a scrutiny committee after they decided to permanently close the scenic railway. It's the oldest roller coaster in the UK and the fourth oldest in the world. Several members of Thanet Council are urging the theme park's owners to attend a meeting and explain the decision. Well, we can hear today from former Dreamland employee Dickie Faulkner, who's been chatting to our reporter Jerry Warren.
Dickie, now you spent a lot of time on this ride, haven't you, over the years?
Yes, I spent 17 years roughly in Dreamland, mostly on the scenic railway, well, 16 of the years on the scenic railway, starting back in 72 when it was really busy. The park was at its heyday, really. Loads and loads of people about. Coaches, cars, everything. The noise, the atmosphere, it used to be tremendous. And we'd be open till late in the evening.
You've been round it thousands of times.
Yeah, it was estimated at one time I've done about 75,000 times. But I don't know how right that is or not, I don't know really.
It's an iconic feature of Margate. Everyone knows the Big Dipper, they used to call it as well. What does it mean to lose this to Margate?
I think it's a big, major loss, really. Loads and loads of people had come to Dreamland just to ride the scenic railway. And they was very disappointed even last year when it was closed all year that the ride, they couldn't get on the ride and they couldn't believe it. Why isn't it running?
Do you know what kind of future it could possibly have?
I really don't know. Without it being a roller coaster, to me it doesn't seem really worth doing anything else. It's a roller coaster, that's what it is. Whatever you do is will not compensate for it not running anymore.
Kent Online Sports.
Starting off with tennis today, and Kent's Emma Raducanu is now looking for her ninth coach in less than 5 years. The British number one has split with Francisco Rog, bringing an end to their six-month partnership. It comes just a week after the 21-year-old from Orpington was knocked out in the second round of the Australian Open. On to football now, and it's a big game for Gillingham this weekend as the league leaders head to Priestfield. Bromley are 6 points clear at the top, while the Gills are looking to make it 3 wins in a row after rediscovering some form. The home side are currently 13th in the table after Tuesday night's game at Cheltenham Town was postponed. Well, let's hear from Gillingham boss Gareth Ainsworth.
First of all, well done Bromley. You know, they're right up there at the top of the league for a reason. You know, they've done brilliant this season. I bet not a lot of people saw that coming. So Woody has done a brilliant job, and I went to watch them the other night, and you know, they're very strong, very good, very physical, but they've got some good players as well, you know. People will say, oh, they're good at what they do. And I used to have that at Wickham, and it was a little bit of a sort of shortcut to thinking, really, you know, when people just say that. So I'm saying, no, they've got some good players. And we've got to match this, you know. They've got some good individuals. Obviously, Michael Cheek scores a lot of goals for them. We know that, you know. He scored a lot of goals over the years. And you know, real threat from crosses, from set pieces, but it's the way they get in the attacking positions that we've got to deal with as well. So yeah, lots to contend with, and yeah, I'm looking forward to it because obviously it's just down the road. It's sort of the Kent derby, isn't it, in League Two, and yeah, we're really looking forward to hosting them, and hopefully it'll be a good game.
Following the postponement on Tuesday, was it a frustration on your part for two reasons? One, you'd want two on the bounce and you want to get back on the pitch as quick as possible. Secondly, the fixtures will become a bit congested later in the season.
Yeah, that's a difficult one. You know, the fixtures coming congested at the end of the season. You know, that's going to be tough, but we've got a good squad. We've got a good, robust squad to be able to deal with that, you know. I know we had a few injuries earlier in the season, but everyone seems to be ticking along nicely at the moment. You know, we've had a few whacks and kicks, but nothing pulling, and they're the ones that I don't like, you know. So yeah, we're looking forward to all those games. You know, we've got a couple of games in hand with some teams in our league now, But we've got to win them. You know, you always, points on the board are always important. Yeah, very frustrating on Tuesday night because Cheltenham, it was one we wanted to play. We're in good form, we're in good momentum. We have to take it into Saturdays now. But it gave me an opportunity to go to Bromley and watch them. So the only downside of that was I had to pass my house to get to Bromley. So I thought I was in for an early night, that one. But no, I went to Bromley to watch that and went back. But I'm glad I did because, you know, you want to see the opposition as a manager. And there's as many videos as you can watch, but it's nice being there live, seeing the atmosphere, seeing the players. And we're looking forward to the game.
Kick-off tomorrow is at 3. You'll be able to follow the match action at Kent Online and we'll have full reaction to the result in Monday's episode of the podcast. Staying with football, and a former Premier League player has signed for Chatham Town. Niall Ranger played as a striker for Newcastle United as well as Swindon, Blackpool and Southend. It's not yet been confirmed whether the 34-year-old could feature in their fifth round FA Trophy match this weekend. And money is being made available to young people in Medway to help them get more involved in sport. Grants of £100 are going to be handed out to help them buy kit or equipment. It's the brainchild of the Lawrence Plummer Foundation, which was set up to support underprivileged children in the towns. I've been chatting to Martin Bass, who's one of the trustees.
Where sometimes people are put off from doing a sport because maybe they're financially troubled or whatever, it's the idea of giving a small amount, which may mean nothing to a lot of people, but may mean a lot to others. And it's a small amount of £100 to maybe buy a piece of kit, a pair of boots, maybe a subscription for a season to a particular sport that somebody wants to do. And it's nominated by, not necessarily by the child or the young person that's been awarded it, but it could be from a teacher, a parent, guardian, or even social services.
Have you noticed that through the cost of living crisis, things like sport have been targeted or challenged because people have thought, actually, I better put money towards this, that and the other, heating bills, for example, or whatever, rather than do a sporting activity? Has sport suffered?
I believe it has immensely. But and when you're in a sort of cost of living crisis, there's always something that's got to give. And quite often it can be to the detriment of maybe somebody in the family that wants to do a sport or get involved, regardless of their ability, regardless if they've ever done it before. But we all know that sport unlocks our children's potential. And that's what we want to try and make sure we can try and avoid in certain cases.
And of course, it is so important generally, not just for keeping fit physically, but we all know the importance of good mental health as far as sport is concerned. Are you hoping that will also have a big part of it with these young people who've been through COVID and they've really had struggles, haven't they?
The reason we are here as a foundation, sadly, is because of COVID, because that's where we lost Lawrence Plummer at that time. So we're fully aware of what COVID can do for a young person. It was only five or so years ago, wasn't it? So we hope it unlocks lots of different positives for people, not just mental, but physical, and the ability to get out and breathe in a bit of fresh air and go from there.
As you say, I mean, it could be for anything, a pair of football boots or a bit of gym kit or something like that. I mean, what would you particularly hope someone gains from this once they've been given the grant money?
One of the things we try and make sure is that we are inclusive of any sport. So regardless, I mean, the main sports these days are based around sort of football, but we're not just all about football, although that's where we sort of come from. We want to make sure that any sport is included in the scheme.
And the first of those grants are going to be handed out at a ceremony this evening. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, you just need to head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And whilst you're on the website, don't forget to check out the latest review from our secret drinker. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. We'll be back with the podcast on Monday.
News you can trust. This is the Kent Online Podcast.